This is a production of Cornell University.
I'm going to start this, but we're going to flip it with the path moving forward. Mm-hmm. I actually think that one is better to start with, and also it, we can do the discussion with less people if people kind of draw in there. So I've been obviously thinking about this quite a lot, about what this means for us, especially given the really hard timeline and everything we had. I have not been in communication about this specific topic with Mary's counsel, president's office, just assuming that they have a lot more going on and obviously standard triaging. So I've been thinking about this in the sense that, you know, we'll have to adjust public comment. You know, I don't think that can happen. We don't have the form ability. We just have the online thing. And I'm wondering truly if that is the best method of public comment during this time and how that works. And especially with such an overhaul to a document, if it's appropriate to just have it be that. In addition, having this then change to a student-focused code of conduct when there are no students on campus, essentially, especially for the underclassmen who would be affected by this, like seniors staying off campus are like, I don't care. I really do wonder, you know, what the best method going forward is. In my mind, it is just to, you know, get, you know, the procedure section in a place where some group next semester, if the fall is here, pick it up and have that be really quick, like have it basically be ready to go, that both the student code of conduct and the procedure section can have a robust public comment period. And then sometime in the early mid part of next semester, there can be a formal vote at the UA. I think that's the best way to go forward. I think that affords, you know, a lot there. And I think honestly, that's the best that we can do at this point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Is that something that the Board of Trustees and President Pollock will agree to, though?
I think so. Like, I will communicate that this be a change, you know, in our schedule to say, like, look, like, we'll continue meeting, we'll continue working on these documents through Zoom, but really, we want to make sure that, you know, there is the robust public comment period, that people know what's happening. And basically us ending in a place where we have essentially what a new code would look like with new procedures. It's just we want that final level of feedback from the public. And then after we finish that like week or two period and the thing, like the UA can vote on that. So
I think that's a great idea. If they say no and they want us to move faster, so I work with federal regulations as a part of my job. So when they're published, the government usually publishes a proposed regulation with a comment period and then takes written comments. And so we could do we could post them for public comment at the end of this term and give people, you know, lots of time, you know, instead of 60 days, give them 120 days, and then at the end, we still, in September, October, have public forums. But we could give people, you know, a lot of time to provide written comment. Now, of course, it takes the agencies a lot of time to go through those written commentaries. It would take us a lot. So you have to go through every single letter.
There's a couple of things. One is, I think that's something to consider. If we have something that we can really post and say, we're posting it for these purposes, and here's how it will work. We're posting it for a very long period of time with the plan, a schedule. Well, we can't schedule because we don't know, but that there will be public forums for individuals or groups to come to, because there's both the reality and the perception.
Right.
if we don't make it clear that we're going to have public forums and no action will be taken until people are back and we have the chance to have everybody participate on campus, both individually and collectively, it will be perceived as yet another situation where the university waits for everybody and does something, right? That is a disaster. Because what you want is for people to
buy in.
Yeah, exactly. You want people to feel like they participated, they believe in this, it was a legitimate process. Mm-hmm. So whether one intends to do something that, you know, trying to get around the process or not is irrelevant. It's the perception. So I think that, you know, I think if we had something in place and we really could post it and say, here's a very long comment period under these circumstances in particular, and there will be public forums mm-hmm. and chances for people to meet on campus, because this is inherently a collective activity. It's not simply individual. I mean, the fact that we all sit together and we have ideas together means that our individual work isn't enough.
Right.
You know, so I really think that that's essential mm-hmm. to do. Yeah, and you know, if there's any pushback from the administration on this, they're crazy if they push back on this. But you know, I've been thinking about this a lot too. I'm sure we all have. I was thinking if we get that kind of pushback, one immediately goes to thinking, why has everything been adjusted except for this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and particularly as Joe, you said there's no students here.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Any exigency of applying this is out the window. Yeah. And I personally would value having the time to really do what we need to do, because we've made real headway, but there's so many rough edges and questions on those procedures.
From an Office of the Assembly's point of view, we're meeting at 2:30 today to figure out like how this is all going to work. And I assume all the clerks will keep Zooming their normal meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how I do the second half anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it shouldn't be a change, but we're not sure. So I'll keep you guys updated.
Shouldn't be a change in
Like me. Like, yeah, sorry. There should be a change in like we're all going to be on Zoom and like, I assume.
I know the staff of the employee assembly is doing it all for the rest of the term.
That's what we'll be doing at the essay. And then we'll move to every other week, actually at the essay, so we've got to be able to down from week to that. Yeah, okay. That sounds good. I will find a right timing to bring this up to them, probably being like, hey,
by the way,
I knew this was a big thing, but like, there's a bigger thing. So I'll find the best way to get that and then relay if they are like, yep, makes sense, thanks so much. And I honestly don't know how the board would be able to do business because like they've drastically changed their schedule of how they meet, just knowing from like the single March meeting alone. So yep, okay, great everyone. Thank you. And if you have any other suggestions about how to best move forward. Right, so we just decided that, you know, for the rest of the semester we meet as usual, just working on the procedures and waiting to do public comment into the early next semester, so people have the time to have a public forum to talk, to actually digest this information, because, you know, if it's being a student code and there are no students on campus, how does that seem fair by any margin? And then
there just isn't going to be participation at this point. Political science through an election without a lot of participation.
Yep.
Well, let's not hope that.
We are already facing the election postponed. Hopefully not, but you know, actually, the fact that the primaries are continuing, primaries subject probably drops, and they're already pitiful rates of participation.
The essay just canceled its elections for the semester, pushed it to next semester.
Oh,
yeah, we did that last night. But facts. President forever. This is time.
He's taking it over
at my plan.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
So friendly.
It's always the nice one. There's like a politics show, like, never waste a good crisis. Someone said that. I forget one character out there, so I'm probably House of Cards. So that's fine. Just do it.
Can we say Marshall now?
our dean is supposed to be stepping down, but you know, maybe it's not.
We shall see. So, on the procedure section, I want to give time to both Gabrielle and Michelle to kind of just walk through their edits and stuff like that. I'm going to actually ask Gabrielle to start, and it actually might be best if you hop into the Zoom call and share your screen from there, because then Michelle can best see it,
sure,
and you can walk through at your best pace. Also, fantastic practice for the future.
Before Gabrielle starts, can I ask one thing?
I didn't go through everything that Gabrielle, I mean, I agreed with a lot of it, but I did notice that a lot of your suggestions were based on an assumption that kind of investigator model would be in place.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, you know, I've already stated my position on this, and I tried to go through the Google Doc again very late last night, so I'm not sure if you've seen it yet, and continue to flag places where moving from the investigator model to a different model would be possible. So maybe you could also explain in terms of would your priority be to move to that investigative model as opposed to, you know, working with the assumption that it's going to be.
I think that's actually really maybe why I shouldn't start, I guess, because I completely agree with you that this is not the correct, like, this is not the format I would choose at all. This was more of my fear that if there is no other option, I at least wanted to get this out there, especially before I graduated, mm-hmm. to have this other option. So we definitely do not need to start with me. This is more of, I think, my backup plan for the committee to say, like, if any other version is rejected, these are the things that I would add to this post so that respondents' rights are actually upheld. I think the main question that I posed to University Council was, how is this supposed to work as this version? And I spoke with the complainants advisors about it just briefly, because one, the complainants advisors had no idea that they were even supposed to be involved in this new code. No one talked to them about that. And two, I just kind of asked, like, what their perspective would be, you know, advising, like, the complainants, and they were very confused, I think, as to, like, who they would be advising and why an RA, an RHD, a police officer would need, like, their assistance. They also know the, like, burdensome nature of how these processes go in Title IX, and they kind of said, why would anyone participate as a complainant ever? So I guess, you know, there's the option that a complainant can waive their rights to participate in a hearing. If you don't participate in an investigation, I don't know if counsel's assumption is that they would just waive all those rights. But yes, I mean, this is like my backup plan. So we definitely do not need to go through those edits right now.
Then let's start with Michelle. You can walk through what the OJA has proposed as an alternative.
Sure, thank you. Can everyone hear me? Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect.
If you want to share your screen to, like, with the document to, like, walk through, if you feel like that would be best for everyone.
How does one do that?
On the top panel, there's one of the buttons that says share screen. If you hover over it, you should be able to find it.
Might be at the bottom.
It'll appear, it'll, like, come out if you move your mouse up to the top, I think.
Shares.
I wonder if we can just have
shares the green button. Oh, there.
The share green.
Yeah.
Button.
Oh. Okay.
I like there's a lot of stuff.
Now there's a way to raise your hand.
Is shopping in Zoom?
Yes. It is under.
Yeah, exactly.
You go to OJA. It was ready. OJA documents.
I also have it just in the email that.
Yeah, I just happened to be.
I think I'm trying to do this.
Great.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I am. Let's see. Hold on. Okay. Sorry, y'all. You are the. Anyone who knows me will know that technology is my least skill set that I have developed. And I don't know if I'm able to do it. I see the share thing.
What happens when you...
Oh, hold on. Oh, this looks positive. Hold on.
There you go.
You got it. Okay.
So you can see this thing, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. You can't see anything else, correct?
Correct.
We see your little head in the top right.
Right. It's literally your desktop. So, yep, if you wanted to move some stuff.
You want to hide anything.
Yeah.
Michelle, you can, Michelle, just expand the screen so that it takes up the full screen in the upper left-hand corner of the browser bar there. Are you on a Mac?
Yes.
Yeah, left corner of that blue bar, there should be like red, green, and...
Yep.
Hit the green. There you go.
Okay, perfect. But you guys can't see any of my like super secret serial killer notes?
No, we can't.
Okay, perfect. So our idea was still to use that single investigator model, but kind of a little bit more of the checks and balances. I hear what Risa's saying and kind of what some of the thoughts are with some of the Title IX sphere, but when we look at what's the best practices in student conduct, these are still the historical and current best practices, so that's why we modeled it off of that. So just to kind of walk through some of the terms, the OJ, we proposed the Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards. Throughout this document, we'll just call it the J, but whatever. The idea, using some of the best practices instead of SDA, the first step will be an educational conference, or still to use that Scheinman program in education mediation. And then we'll talk about where it splits as to administrative resolution or to a hearing board. The hearing board is going to operate in a lot of ways in the same way, so we'll talk about that, and the review board as well. The current administrative chair, we just called the logistics chair, and then no proposed change to the terms. And so I wanna walk through the overview. Can you guys see the blue dots, or the blue? Okay. So the idea is that when an incident report is submitted, nothing's gonna change. So the office would still do its initial triage, things of that nature. The proposed difference is that it's only going to be a university complaint. There's not individual complainants. We get so few of those, unlike the Title IX sphere, where you do have a lot more individual complainants. And I think this goes to acknowledge some of what the complainant's advisors shared, because hearing from Gabrielle, yeah, I don't think they knew that they were going to be part of a system or structure in that regards. After the initial incident report is submitted, we would do our traditional initial inquiry, right? We would do a jurisdictional analysis. We would see if there's any need for any interim measures like a temporary suspension, no contact directive, things of that nature. That would stay the same. And then we could administratively close it where there's no action. So let's say we have something that happened 20 years ago, right? We would say this doesn't fall under our jurisdiction anymore, so we're going to administratively close that. If it's outside the jurisdiction of whatever we decide, where the campus or on campus, we would close it for that regards. In the same way right now, if it doesn't meet our standard of proof under the code to even take jurisdiction, we refer it, right? It could go back to house rules, it could go to Title IX, it could go to academic integrity. If our jurisdictional standards are met, then we move forward with the investigation. And again, this is exactly what the current system is right now. Mm-hmm. And that either goes to an educational conference or the mediation. So right now, we send cases for the mediation, and we would be doing the same thing, right? We look at the low-level violations, contact folks if they want to do it. So the next step is that educational conference and mediation. So one of the things in the current code is if we do an investigation and we find that there's the burden of proof can't be met, a student actually has to sign an SDA of not responsible. There's no way to administratively close the case. That is really frustrating because sometimes we'll schedule hearings for not responsible, and this is just a waste of time and resources. And so one of the things that we propose in the procedures is that administrative not responsible, that closing to say, you know what, the burden of proof can't be met, or we did our investigation, it turns out it actually doesn't fall under our jurisdiction. If we think that the burden can be met and all of the elements of the code are met, we would offer an administrative resolution or administrative resolution by mediation, which is the mediation program that we have the Scheinman. Again, this is exactly the same as what our current process is right now. And then let's say currently right now, if a student doesn't accept the proposed SDA, then it goes to a university hearing board. This is where our process proposed splits a little bit. So if it's anything less than suspension or dismissal, it would go to an administrative panel. If it's suspension or dismissal, then it would go to a university hearing board. And then the university hearing board has the right to appeals. So let me talk about what that, is everybody with me so far before I talk about what the panel is versus the hearing board?
Yes.
Okay. So the panel, I see it a little bit more similar. I modeled this a little bit off of Title IX because what I heard from council and their feedback is that they don't like having three completely different systems. I don't think that's necessarily our problem. I think we're supposed to propose what we think is the best interest for the community and let them configure that. So the idea of it's something less than suspension or dismissal, it would precede to the administrative panel process. And I just want to point out that during this entire time, the role of the JCC stays exactly the same. They're participating, engaging, things of that nature. So the administrative panel is the idea that it's going to be three panelists. It's going to be a university hearing board chair, whoever supervises the director, whoever supervises the JA would be a permanent member. A permanent member would also be an elevated student leadership. And so what we see and we wanted to create for the system is a higher level for student voices to be heard, but have it as a higher level. So from the university hearing board pool, there'll be one person who's elected as sort of the student chief. I don't want to call it chief justice, but you know, kind of that idea that they're the student voice on there. And then either a designated hearing board chair or they rotate. So the idea that you're still having faculty, staff, and student this will be a written submission. So the idea is that the JA thinks that the burner proof and the facts are supported by this in the code. The person who is appealing would say that, you know, I don't think that the facts support it for this way. Again, this would be reading, a written submission. Our recommendation for this administrative panel is that they meet bi-weekly. So they have a standing meeting time which to process these cases. Panel submissions that the parties will submit will be typically 3 to 5 pages in length. 2 to 5. The student conduct submission will be a summary of the investigation and our proposed administrative resolution. So what the SDA resolution would look like. The respondent submission is a reply to the OJA submission, including points of disagreement. Similar to UHB, similar to the current review board process, the administrative panel will then review the submissions of the party. They can uphold the proposed administrative resolution in full. They can modify in parts both responsibility and or sanctions. They can remand it. This is similar to a show cause currently. So if somebody challenges the decision of the JA's office, they show cause if they're a complainant. They can remand it for further investigation, or they can route it to a university hearing board if they want to impose suspension or dismissal. Gabrielle and I had some conversations about this, and one of the things we talked about is that if the UHB wants to refer it to a hearing board for a full fact-finding, even if it's not suspension or dismissal, that's something that I don't feel firmly to say I'm opposed to it. I think it's a nice compromise. And then they would pen the decision and go from there. There's no appeal. Decisions are in writing. Each panelist has one vote majority for that. If it goes to a university hearing board, so if it's a suspension or dismissal case, and again, this is where we're looking at a separation from the university, and that's how we designated our proposal change. Then the hearing would look a little bit of a hybrid between the current code process and the 6.4 process. What's really important is that the JA will not be presenting the case. It'll be a written submission. And again, this is that single investigator model, but there's a check and balance on that, Risa. Because I want us to really move away from the idea that the JA's office is the prosecutor. That is not our role. The idea that we sit there and have to present against the student is contrary to every best practice in conduct. But the idea is that the person who does the case handling from the JA's office would then have the option to be called as a witness. The panel could say, yep, we want to talk to them, or we don't. And this is very similar to the 6.4 process. And there's that credibility analysis where they can question the investigator, they can question points of the report, things of that nature. And so the idea of the hearing board would be submission of the content, introduction, opening statements by the respondent, testimony by the respondent, testimony by any witnesses, those that the respondent wants to call or the panel, or the board wants to call, closing statements. Again, the investigator could be called as a witness, but they may not have to be called. Again, this is going to be similar. The JCCs will have the exact same role as the advisor. And then the UHB will determine whether or not there's a violation. As noted, the party participants, the respondent stays the same, the advisor, the UHB can continue to hear cases in absentia. Composition would be the exact same composition as we have. One of the things we talked about as proposing is that at the start of the semester that we really set dates and we have an alternative with each constituency for each hearing board so that we're not delaying and putting in administrative work because there might be an increase in hearings. Decision.
Say that again, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, so the idea is that when we do scheduling of hearings at the start of the semester, we would ask every hearing board member to also pick a date in which they're an alternate so that we're always making decisions with a full panel and not just quorum. We don't have a ton of quorum decisions, but that is something that I want to make sure that all the voices are heard. So we talked about that just from a logistics point of view. Because we're looking at a separation from the university, we did put an appeal process in that, and that looks almost exactly like our current appeal process. So I want to just kind of pause there because I think that's the biggest overview. And as y'all scroll through the documents, and you can see some of the things, but I'm going to pause for questions or thoughts right now.
Thank you. Questions or thoughts currently?
So Michelle and I did speak about this a little bit already, but I guess, so I have, so I don't know exactly how I feel between this code and the one that council proposed, because they're both, I think this one gets us closer maybe to what the current code is, but some of the like way that it's actually applied to me like raises the same concern. So for example, the composition of the that first level, the administrative panel, it doesn't rotate who the members are. And so I feel like essentially it's kind of like outsourcing those decisions to just three people who will constantly render the same decision, which to me seems to make like a hearing panel kind of meaningless because it does change maybe the role of the JA's office, getting them away from that role, but then you're just kind of giving that authority to three people who don't change. And so that's a concern I have. I think that almost makes that like first level of hearing turn into an appeal, especially because it is on, it's all written, there's really no fact development at all. So it to me kind of diverts the purpose. And then I think that's just really emphasized by the number of cases that are even suspension or dismissal cases, because, you know, looking at the annual report from last year, only 0.3% of cases, four, were suspension cases. The year before that, there were 0.6% deferred suspension cases, so that's only five. And I don't see suspension. There was one suspension case the year before, so 0.1% of all cases. So that, to me, it means that like these hearings that are fact development are only saved for, you know, less than 1% of cases a year. Those are also cases where, you know, usually an attorney's involved. Like it is a recognition already that it's more serious. And so I don't think that this role of fact development of a, you know, a rotating panel should only be reserved for those most extreme cases. So I think those are the things that I guess I'm just most concerned about from the respondent's perspective.
Yeah.
So would having a
a panel like the ones for the suspension for the others work, have a rotating panel? Like if we just...
So, I mean, yeah, that, I mean, that takes us much closer back to like the current code, I think. Yes, I think that definitely alleviates one of my concerns. The other one is just the fact development aspect as well.
And I wonder whether the everything in writing, whether that would disadvantage many of the people who are, you know, challenged with defense. I think a lot of students might want to talk to somebody or talk to them, especially if they don't have any support or help doing that.
Well, they would have under this, they would have us to help. I think from my experiences in the hearings, like a lot of students have a hard time kind of articulating even to us exactly what they mean or you know what their stance is kind of. And then once they kind of see the questioning when the JA is questioning certain witnesses, then we can kind of break and then they're like, oh yeah, like this and this, and you know, can you ask about this? And
so I would throw it out there that I think it's important to maybe for us to think about what are the roles of the different folks involved in this process. Because I can appreciate what you're saying, Gabrielle, is, you know, where's the fact finding piece? And I think that's a good question, but where does it lie? And who or which people should be responsible for that? Because there is a very, you know, I kind of, as a person who does the day-to-day work, I always bring us back to like the practical application piece of it. The time, the logistics, the resources, is it efficient? I think that should be a consideration. So I encourage folks to think about it from that perspective too, is whose role is it to do facts?
Go ahead.
Okay, I have some questions and also some thoughts about things people are saying. So I'll start with the questions. So, Michelle, I understood from what you said and also from your chart, there are no individual complainants, only university complaint. However, I don't see, okay, the university complainant would be through the JA's office, right? Okay, so I don't see any place for the university complainant through the JA's office presenting a case. That's what you're saying. You want to get away from the JA's office presenting a case. So that seems to mean that there's no burden of proof on anybody to prove that the allegations of misconduct are supported by the evidence, as opposed to what I'm understanding you're saying is that whoever's in charge, whether it's an administrative panel or the university hearing board panel, that they'll just conduct it and say, well, do we think there's enough evidence? Am I understanding that correctly?
No, the burden of proof will still stand the university. So right now, almost every single complaint that the university files at the JA's office is a university complaint.
But I don't see, am I just missing it? I thought you were saying that you want to get away from the JA's office bringing the case in the hearing. So I'm just not understanding how those two things go together.
Yeah, I think it's the idea that it's not the one who's presenting the case. They submit the information if they're called as a witness, but I want to get away from the idea that it looks like a university official is going against a student.
But that is what the university official is doing by bringing the case as the complainant. So why shouldn't it actually look like what it is?
And I think this is where we might have some philosophical disagreements, because I think when I'm looking at the idea that the university is submitting in the same way that the US government, right, as much as I hate like using that as a thing, right, when we're doing, you know, the appeals, it's still, you know, I'm appealing to the Sixth Circuit and I'm still just presenting the case in writing on behalf of the government, right? It's the idea that it's still presenting. And the procedures that we have here, if the hearing board wants to call individuals who've done the investigation to tease that out, that's fine, but I'm really passionate about the idea of we need to get away from this hearing board model. Hearings present less than 0.3% of all cases from the biggest public record that we had last year. I think we had 26 hearing boards. That represents 0.03% of the work. And I'll yield to Christina on this, but when you prepare for a hearing, that takes out 15 to 20 hours of 1 week. These are voluminous and things of that nature. And so the burden of proof is still on the university. It just looks like the burden of proof is through the written submission versus the oral advocacy.
Okay, so that is it. Can I continue?
Yeah.
I don't want to just take up more time here. But I mean, so that is a difference in viewpoint about what's most appropriate. I guess we'll have to hash that out. But other questions just in terms of my understanding. Yeah, let's see. I did write down some questions. Let me just find them. I have comments and questions in different places here. Let me see maybe what you were telling us. Okay. Well, actually, that may be the question. But in terms of the concerns, I have the same concerns that Gabrielle raised regarding the lack of fact development. I've been involved with arbitration cases, which I think are probably the most similar to this, as opposed to having been involved in, you know, trial work, because you have a relaxed burden of proof, not relaxed burden of proof, but the relaxed, you know, evidentiary provisions. It's more kind of the airing of the information, which is therapeutic, in the words of arbitration, labor arbitration. There's therapeutic day in court kind of feelings for people to say, even if I lose, I feel I had a fair hearing. And it seems to me that kind of therapeutic philosophy is more consistent with what you're trying to achieve, which is people feeling like, okay, this was a process that I was heard at, as opposed to I was silenced and I had to only do it on the record. And I know as somebody, as an arbitrator, if I were only hearing, if I was only reading, I can't get the case. I need to hear people. And so I have great concerns with not having a fact-finding hearing. And it sounds like from what you all are saying that, not sounds like, but from what you're saying, most of the cases are not going to be the suspension and dismissal cases. The vast majority will probably be settled early on. So you've got this screening mechanism. So I'm just unclear about why you need this sort of like hearing light kind of approach. And as Gabrielle said, almost like an appeal from an early administrative decision. I'm very concerned with that.
And I can appreciate that. But I would say it's the idea that we're trying to mirror what we're seeing is the best practices in the field. Like, we are so far asunder of what is actually appropriate, educational, and things of that nature. I would say on the whole, the idea that the administrative panel, they're still doing fact finding, and that's why I did really credit the idea that if the idea that they think the facts are in dispute and they want to send it to a hearing board, that would be something that I would yield to. But the point about the administrative panel promoting consistency is actually something that's really important. We had a case this year that's going to be a public record in which the case was separated after it was joined. Two individuals, same behavior, different outcome. The person who got most injured had the highest number of sanctions because there wasn't that consistency. I will also point out that student was a minority student, and the student who had the lighter sanction, but the more, the loss of the direct impact, had a lighter sentence. And so to go back to that point, that administrative panel, the idea is that it is supposed to be consistency, because as they see the same breadth of cases and things of that nature, we want there to be faith and fairness in the system. And so that is a little bit more of the modeling off of that 6.4 model, where traditionally it's always Ryan Lombardi. And then there's a faculty member who they usually keep consistent, and then they rotate random members. And so I did just want to point that out as being from that. And I guess I'm having a little bit of a hard time of understanding what facts that y'all think are not going to be able to be raised in a written submission, because that'll really help me to understand where you're coming from.
Okay.
Can I just respond to something that was just said? So the 6-4 model, though, the initial hearing panel does rotate every single time that the panelists, the three panelists who hear those hearings are different every time. It's just at the appeal level where those people are, there's two that stay the same and then one rotates. So it is the appeal that's not changing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's not, are there facts that you couldn't write down that are hurt? It's the nature of the process that people being heard is different from only having written submissions. It is qualitatively a different process. I could picture that if you have the possibility of only lower sanctions, that maybe there is a different process that could be put into effect. But I think that one that simply removes witnesses completely and is only on the written record is, I mean, we can call it best practices. I don't think it's a best practice. I don't care how many people do it. My view is that there's something very important about people being able to be heard. I mean, we may say, well, you're not going to get suspended, you're not going to be expelled, whatever, so it's not as serious. Well, if it's me having that on my record, it's serious, you know, if I'm a student. So I like the idea of having processes that will, you know, encourage us to reach agreement, to reach settlements, not to drag on. I think that's a positive goal. I think, in fact, if there can be some sort of like educational process that really does avoid hearings completely, I'm all for that. But if you go to a hearing, I think it should be a hearing, not an administrative appeal, which is really what this is.
Just a question, because it seems like when we break down like case load and where cases are going and stuff like that, you know, obviously it's like 0.1, very small percent going, you know, suspension or dismissal. Then there's like 44% that are first time alcohol violations that are going to be in that educational mediation section that I'm pretty sure will be there. So what types of cases are we assuming will really be, their exit ramp is basically in that administrative panel if they don't appeal? Like, what types are we looking at? Like, I wouldn't even think theft at a certain point, like, and I think hazing would go somewhere. You would obviously have hazing be an administrative panel to an appeal of UHB, just because I feel like that's how those cases go sometimes, unless there's like a clear recognition or anything like that. So what types of cases are we really anticipating that administrative panel to be seeing?
So I think when you look at the public records of the past couple of years, we have very few suspension or dismissal cases. And honestly, a lot of that is because those do get settled by the SDA process. I think the point about the idea of being heard, and this is a credit to the case handles in our office, I actually don't hear any cases, is they are creating that space where students feel like they have the opportunity to be heard, all the facts are done, the investigation's complete. And they agree that even if they disagree with how happy they are with the outcome, that the case handlers did give them space to be heard and they're agreeing to the outcome. And so when I think about some of the public records this past year and this current year, and there's definitely some hazing ones. We've had one or two hazing cases where we recommend a suspension or dismissal. But on the whole, they fall below the idea that the person's not going to be separated from the university. So we think about that being our baseline of the property interest, what is going to be taken away has a possibility of taken away. And that's how we really made that thing. Most of the time, our hearings go for things that are pretty low level. Right now, the URB has a decision that they are going to be rendering regarding pretty much first-time alcohol violations for freshman students in their first semester, which is going to have an impact on the work. And I've said this multiple times, if the burden of proof lowers in the code, we'd be looking to deferred written reprimands for a lot of these first-time violations. So I think on the whole, we would see a lot less administrative panel cases. And Gabrielle, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like a lot of the cases we've seen the coming past year have been for things that would be considered under a deferred written reprimand or the new precedent of the URB.
So if I can add, I think some of the cases that if we were to adopt this type of system, you might see students who have recidivism go towards an administrative process, perhaps a proposal of something that involves disciplinary probation, which is kind of just a step right below suspension. Cases that may involve some kind of physicality, but maybe not a substantial injury, that warrants something like a suspension. Those are some of the things that are coming to my mind. But I think as the system stands right now, anytime a student disagrees with an SDN, they have their right to, right? It all goes straight to a full hearing. Anything from public urination all the way to the most egregious violations under the code of conduct. And so, you know, I can appreciate that some folks might see that as beneficial in that, you know, you have very clear outlines of the system we have in place. But I think the types of roles that we have at a hearing, the amount of time we're spending scheduling hearings, the logistics of it, the preparation that goes into it, is not sustainable. And I think that is a reason for perhaps creating this middle space where there is less at stake. We're not talking about a separation from the institution. You can continue to be a student here if you move forward with the administrative panel. And I think that it still gives in, I think the idea of feeling heard looks different for everyone. It does. For some folks, I think it actually, having something in writing actually is better for them to express their thoughts and ideas too. So I would push back a little bit on the idea that an oral recitation of your perspective is the best way to go. But of course, you know, we will ultimately have to decide in one way or another. I don't know that presenting as however you would like to share your perspective is appropriate and fair in that way. But that's kind of my input on the potential cases that might fit into this middle administrative.
Yeah.
I think this year over others, we have seen, like Michelle was saying, the cases that are going to hearings are what would be deemed very low level violations. They are these like first time underage drinking cases. And I want to emphasize that I think that's for two reasons. So one, I think that's because these students actually do feel like they need their opportunity to be heard. Either they don't feel like their individual situation is being, you know, completely considered because, you know, they don't think they should have the same level of sanctions as their roommate or something like that in the situation. And so they do feel like the hearing panels have been more receptive to that. I also think the second reason is because this year, our office has just committed to bringing those cases to a hearing. In past years, you know, we added the JCC this year. We haven't been able to maybe push as much to take those things to hearings. And this year, we really have. And we've said, like, if the student wants to and if they feel strongly about it, we're absolutely going to be there for them. And so I think for those two reasons is why maybe this year has been what would be deemed low-level violations. I don't think, though, just because they're not being separated from the university, that signals for that student in particular that they shouldn't be heard or that they, you know, don't get additional process, I guess.
If I could just, you know, push back on that notion that it is, you know, I think in what we want to do, you know, those low-level violations, you know, the goal, I think, you know, in that educational conference is that they would never even in that process be like, oh, like, I just feel like, oh, like, I think that's the thing. Like, we have to, I think when we see this on the page, we're seeing it, oh, this isn't very abstract. I think when seeing it in person, we might be able to tease things out. This is why it's like thinking abstract, but moving to the practicality is really difficult because these educational conferences / mediations, I'm assuming, and this has been obviously like assuming that those underage drinking things, like there's a roommate, if there are two roommates and one, they're both, you know, there's a complaint against both of them for underage drinking, that mediation between the two of them, they would be able to have that, you know, hash out that both their sanctions would be exactly the same. That's the goal. If not, then that's why we have an administrative panel. I think, and that's why I'm kind of that's why I feel like, you know, that's a really great model to be thinking of, because, well, yes, in this current model that we have, you know, if a student does feel like it's unfair, taking it to the full extent you possibly can, you know, I agree with that. I think fairness is the most important thing we should consider. I just think in the practice, these educational conferences and mediations are going to look very different in my mind, just because I think of how we are envisioning the staffing to change. And also, like, I guess this is important context to bring in that I'm just now piecing together in my head. Dean of Students is hiring full new staff now that specialize in this practice. And mediation, conflict resolution, alternative dispute. And organizationally, what we're doing with the OJA is bringing that into Dean of Students. And so we're now I think this is a time when looking at the procedures, really understanding now this new organizational structure, I think it helps me figure this out a little bit more. And so that's why I'm kind of, I see everyone's points on this about like fairness and stuff like that, and wanting people to be heard. I just think what being heard looks like in that mediation phase is going to be so different. Yeah, Risa.
Yeah, I think it's great to increase those initial stages of the educational conference and mediation, you know, assuming it's well done, people don't feel pressured. I think that's a good thing. And at all those stages, the respondent would have the chance to be represented by the JCC.
Yeah.
So I think that's really good. Mm-hmm. To me, settlements are a good thing. And so you're going to have this screening. I think the concept of a different kind of a hearing where it's less than some kind of separation, whether suspension or expulsion, is something that we should really consider. My thought is that one of the things, perhaps, as you know, just thinking about it as I'm hearing this, would be, for example, you have the administrative panel. I like Gabrielle's idea of not having it always be the same panel. You could have the panel chair be the same, but then rotation, and that creates the consistency. Much of it is done in writing. And that the individuals, the respondent, and I guess if there's somebody who's not the complainant, because the university is the complainant, but somebody who brings a charge initially has the opportunity to be heard if they wish to. Mm-hmm. And then this administrative panel, if they feel it's necessary, can call other witnesses. Right, mm-hmm. Like the people who are presenting to the panel could even say, I hope you will consider calling these other witnesses when they present. So what we do is we have increasing degrees of formality. So this could be the way that the, you know, the Supreme Court talked about some kind of a hearing, bumped up from the kind of hearing into people having the opportunity to be heard. Because I know if I were a student, I would not particularly find a case handler to be somebody who's there to hear me necessarily impartially. And I'm not saying that there's something wrong with the individuals who are case handlers. I would just be worried about that. And so if I felt that it were that the situation wasn't settled earlier and I wanted to go to a hearing, having this opportunity to be heard by impartial decision makers would be less formal than the full hearing, but still provide that. And I also have one other question,
yeah.
Just factually. For findings of, I'm going to use guilt because I don't have another word where you say responsibility. Okay. Findings of responsibility at this stage, if it's less than suspension or dismissal, would those also be recorded? Transcripts, what's the story of that? I've never been clear on the transcripts.
So, as it stands, I'll let Christina and Michelle explain as it stands right now, and then I'll search into the old documents.
Yeah, as it stands right now, it's a policy. It's policy 4.7 that dictates the retention of records, and there are multiple levels of record keeping. I'm happy to go into that, but it's quite lengthy. But I think to me, it's independent of kind of our conversations about what the process and procedures, because they're both independent policies, and that policy can also be changed. I don't know who is responsible for that, but if we start making decisions based on what the current policy looks like, you know, they're organic documents. They just change. I don't know that that's the best way to go. You know,
oh, all I'm saying is yeah. that it would make a difference, I think, to somebody if it were recorded. Yeah. It raises the stakes.
One thing that I don't know if we had as robust a discussion in the student code of conduct that we just like that we worked on and kind of been, that is put in there, and so. To what is there, one, minor offenses are not reported. Two, probationary status may be reported until a student graduates. If the student departs the university prior to graduation, then at the point of the departure, the student has incurred no further code violations. They can get that off the record. Suspension is reported until it has been fully served. The student has demonstrated a 1 year of good conduct without subsequent code violations. And a request has been reviewed and approved by the Dean of Students. So the Dean of Students can then get a suspension off a student's record. And then lastly, expulsion is reported permanently.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that was put in there. And I think that is really important to recognize in this process, because if we are giving the students the opportunity to show change behavior after a violation, yeah, I think we really should. And I think that does inform a lot in the procedures of how we think about what the administrative panel looks like in this process. And the kind of the vulnerability coming to the table on those educational mediations. You know, if students know that, hey, like this is, I messed up once and I have the opportunity to like get this off my record and this actually won't be reported, I actually do want to have a conversation. I think if we lower the stakes on sanctions, we improve the procedures and improve the willingness to participate. Yeah, Christine.
Can I jump back to something I think Lucy, you were talking about, and which is the idea of feeling worried that students may not be heard in the educational conference and mediation. So I thought that's what I heard.
No, I was worried. Talking about okay. the case handler, like the investigation case handler is what I was talking about.
So that sort of happens in the educational conference and mediation aspect too, is what I'm understanding.
Okay. I was talking about what I was understanding pre-educational conference, because I mean maybe I just don't understand what an educational conference is. That would be useful to know. I think I know what a mediation is, but I don't really know what an educational conference is. I was understanding that as something that comes after an initial investigation and decision about whether to.
It does. I think it basically it kind of mirrors what we're doing now. It's the SDA process. It's the time when the JA's office would invite the student in to talk about their perspective. We would share kind of our perspective on information gathering. A JCC can participate in that process, of course, in the capacity as an advisor. And I think in that meeting, the concerns about student potentially not being heard, I mean, I think we're moving in the direction to build in mechanisms to preserve that, right? I mean, the fact that it sounds like there's momentum to move our office under some type of division would create mechanisms for human resources to address any of those issues. We have a case handler who is broke, right? Who is not listening to the students, consistently exhibiting bias, who is not treating students fairly, especially if the JCC is involved. I'm sure JCC would be like, I'm noticing a pattern. This is an issue that needs to be reported. So maybe I take it a little personal, right? Because I'm in that role right now. And I think that reasonable people can disagree. There are a lot of conversations where I have students that are like, you know what? Accountability sucks. You know, it is not something that I really was like looking forward to coming to the JA's office and be like, yeah, let's do this, right? I don't think that's ever going to be that perspective. But as long as we have an understanding as we walk out of that space to be like, you know what? It was fair. We had a fair conversation. You actually listened to me before you made any kind of preconceived notion about me, is what we're looking for. I think that's kind of the best outcome you can have in that kind of conversation, given all the roles you're assuming when you're walking into that space. So I want to perhaps be cautious about talking about this idea, basing all of our decisions on the possibility that there may be a small percentage of the students who feel when there are built-in mechanisms to report that type of behavior if it happens.
Am I wrong to think that the educational conference does not have sanctions that follow, or am I getting that from council's draft?
I think it's my sense that it wouldn't have sanctions, or the sanctions that are reported can be easily repealed off, like probationary status, maybe reported until the student graduates, and then, you know, it's no longer reported anymore. So I think it's depending. I mean, did Michelle have something on that? Or
So the educational conference would still be a resolution by what we call an SDA, that there would be sanctions applied, right? The question of what council has proposed for reportability, I have some concerns about that, but that's a different conversation. Because, for example, I want to be able to tell once a student signs a FERPA release, if they're applying to, let's say, be an SA or a RA, I want to be able to say that, you know, this student has a history of walking into people's rooms while they're drunk. So how would that be an educational conversation that if you're going to hire this person as an employee, to make sure, for example, that they don't have access to lock boxes after hours, right? So these are some of the questions where we talk about in the comments that I put about the council's draft of reportability, of noting something about deferred written reprimand is reportable only to internal campus partners with a student's release form. But I do think the idea that we need to get away from focusing the procedures on what the sanction is gonna be in that regards, but the educational conversation would ideally be a place where they sign an administrative resolution, which we call an SDA right now, that there is whatever the sanction reportability and retention comes from that. And again, that first three steps of the process that's being proposed, with the exception of changing the complainant, is the exact same thing that we do right now. There's nothing that's changed in that procedure because that part of the process works really, really well. And I do think the point about, I just want to say this is a little bit tangential to what people have been talking about, is that I actually think students are discouraged from participating in hearings as it is right now because of the time commitment that's required. And so I actually do think we're going to, if it's a written submission where they only need to put in, you know, 2 hours worth of work, able to work with their JCCs to create a draft and to submit that, I actually think students are going to avail themselves of this process more versus less.
Thank you.
Recently, Gabrielle.
Yeah, what I like about where this discussion is going is the contrast with what University Council has put forward, because this is going in a direction where the attempt is to settle cases as informally as possible with an educational outcome, if possible. And that the way that I'm seeing it, as I said before, is that there's increased formality as you go up the chain where you haven't screened things out. That seems to me to be a positive thing. I think the administrative panel could work, as I said, you know, perhaps with adding the opportunity to be heard. I'm not talking about a full blown hearing, you know, something like that could be worked out. And then, you know, you screen out just the few that go to the full hearing. I think that's all really positive. And what I also want to say is that, and I want to make sure I understand the proposal here. The draft from the University Council, the kind of almost bizarre level of detail about the investigation is so intimidating, mm-hmm. right? And I just kind of left it there and kind of, you know, tried to kind of, you know, change the nature of it sometimes. That I thought, this is just so bizarre. It's good to let people know if there's an investigation, but it immediately increases the level of the formality. It feels like you've got this person who's recording everything, and you know, you've got these transcripts that's all gonna be part of the record, and you know, you basically have kind of a star chamber feeling from reading it, and it is scary. And so it seems to me that what you're talking about is substituting for that, and I want to make sure that I understand that, because I'd love to see that eliminated. I just think it's good to let people know it's an investigation, but mm-hmm. but that the qualitative nature of it was just horrifying to me.
Yeah, exactly. So this proposal was drafted before council's proposal, and it's a little bit more of a skeleton outline, just for the idea that if the CJC wasn't happy with some of these ideas, I didn't want our staff to put in hours and hours on drafting the exact thing. So yeah, this is exactly not even a response to the council's draft. This was created before we got their procedures.
But the council's draft in terms of that investigation laid out is you do not picture using something like that. Talk about a time sink.
I just wanted to build off of Reese's idea about like how we can kind of merge maybe a little bit. So, you know, I definitely agree with you that this, after discussing it, I prefer this to the kind of council 6-4 model. I think one way to make the hearing more robust would be to just rotate the panelists to, you know, maybe take some of what council proposed. So there's a written opening statement. And then the submission, the written submission from parties saying we want these witnesses and this is why you should consider the witnesses. And then not just the hearing chair, but the panel can decide who the witnesses should be, if they should be called at all, then they can determine that. And then an oral closing, I do think is important, that oral aspect. I think that could make this hearing just like a little bit more elevated and kind of compromise the concerns.
Yeah, so I'm glad you said that, asked the question about whether this is a substitution or different, because I like this a lot better, and I also didn't like council's draft. I had a hard time actually getting through it. I can't imagine a student trying to get through it. So I don't know if we have quorum here, but I would love to move to use Michelle's version as our starting point.
Well, while you're counting, I completely agree. And I mean, I like Gabrielle's idea of, so maybe I'm gonna shade a little differently from Lisa, which is, you know, I like having detailed procedures. I think the Senate, I really want us to ask for detailed procedures and detailed reporting. And I don't know exactly how the latter part applies to this process, but the former part, being really specific about what's gonna happen. And I think even in the educational conference, the way I heard you described it, it sounds great, and that's what should be written down. And my problem with Council's version was not the level of detail. It is kind of the punitive character of the interaction. And I just think that, in fact, thinking about how we can describe an educational conference that is that is enough detail so that we are, you know, committing ourselves to this process and not expecting, we shouldn't have to worry about people being hired and not doing it right. We shouldn't have to, because it should be clear what they're supposed to do. But also, what they're supposed to be doing should not be a punitive process.
So, we do have quorum. We have 7 voting members in the room and on the Zoom. Our total voting membership is 11, so we're over the quorum threshold. So we can go ahead and vote to work off of this copy. What that process will look like, I'm assuming it's just us adding amendments, giving a little bit more of that robust detail. If we want to, I think a great potential is to kind of leave this as a skeleton and start working on like pulling parts out and creating separate standalone like detailed documents, so that if I'm a student, this is perfect for me to read, because then I'm like, oh, okay. But if I want to see more information, I can go into the detailed version of it, just in case like I'm that type of student. And I think that would actually be a really great way to kind of be working on things as we go on. Yeah, Gabrielle.
So then would the vote, because I'm not voting, but would the voting people be considering what Risa and I have been emphasizing about the hearing?
Yeah, we just have to vote to accept that this is the document we're working on, and then we can make amendments to that.
Okay.
So if I can get a motion.
So much.
Thank you. Is there a second? I'll give more in a second. So if you're in the Zoom, just put your response in the comments and we'll be able to see it. But all in favor of using this document as our working document?
Come on, give me the chat.
Can
you hear? You can say it.
Oh
yes. even if Kat
abstains. There's an exclamation point.
Kat, vote.
I'm in favor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Favor. Sorry, mute.
I'll text Kat, actually.
So,
oh,
we have
this
unmuted, so I don't know if she.
Hello?
Kat?
Let me ask if she can hear us.
Can you? She just remuted. Oh. So do we?
I think we had all everybody's
yes, right?
Everybody here said
except
yeah.
We need
we just don't have it.
I texted her. Here we go. Big moment. It's gonna be yes. I
grabbed.
Yay! So we have 6-0-1.
Right.
So that passes.
Thank you,
so this is our working document.
I'm so glad I spent all this time.
yeah.
But actually, it was useful to see
So what we can do with this is I will condense this all into a Google Doc for the group. I will put the Google Doc link into the group, into like the, that, whatchamacallit, into the Google Drive folder, put it on the link that is a part of like the links document in the box, so everyone has that. And what we can do is we can highlight specific sections that were like warrants discussion, and then our sections that we're like want to create a separate, more detailed document. Making those decisions, I think, are really important. Obviously, I think, you know, we have some amendments in the administrative panel section, and that might be a section where we want a detailed side document. It seems like the UHB process is staying mostly the same. Not really, wait, take that back. It just seems like that was a section we were comfortable with. Maybe we pull out, maybe a standalone document for that just to put detail in there to ensure things.
Yeah, I think there's
stuff
to
we work stuff to do.
Yeah, but this is a good grounding instead of Goldberg.
So we can do that.
Can I maybe start trying to work on that this weekend, the panel stuff?
Yeah.
Does it know?
Yeah. You have the ability to. You can start working on as soon as possible.
You're talking about the administrative panel.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. So we can do that. And then we can figure out kind of from there how to best structure like the procedures working through them for the meetings and how we can, you know, best do that moving forward with everything. Yeah.
Maybe it's someplace and I don't know where to look, but following up on Bryce's point, I would find it really useful if the DA's office could do something that describes and like I said, maybe it's written someplace and I don't know. But like you were saying, when you were explaining so that we can figure out what to incorporate rather than our reinventing.
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to start that. Yeah.
You can do that. And then, it feels like a very natural place to end today, even though we have 10 more minutes.
Since I was, you know, this is my like, three guys, oh, you're so bad. Since I was under, dealing with this crazy document, I did go to the free speech one because I had mentioned to you all that I wanted to see if I could add something about particularly the outside the outside demonstration stuff, and so I took some things and modified it slightly and added just a short paragraph of two sentences. I know if people can, if you can bring it up or if people can look at it now.
Is this the one in the Google Drive?
Yeah.
It's in the Google Drive, yeah. That's still labeled statement on responsible speech and expression, but we changed the title. But if you go under the free and open and green expression, I added this paragraph. Outdoor picketing, yeah. That's basically what's in the code now, with just some, you know, slightly reworded in terms of
I took out some stuff. So I was thinking that that would be nice to recognize. And that way we don't have all the stuff about what happens inside. We don't have all the small structure stuff here, but that seems to me to be very core to the nature of the protest.
Yeah.
All right.
Yay. So
that's a good place to
end. No, I don't think so. Just this is not substantive, but it's up to the board. So what we can do is I'll transition all the documents in the Google Drive so people have that. Kind of people can start highlighting, marking things up as they see, you know, on the procedure section. And then I'll communicate with the leadership, the university council, et cetera, being like, hey, like, this is kind of our plan of action. This is kind of where we're at. Like,
I think you need to be clear. I'm really not kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I realize that
this is the
diplomatic, but
yeah.
This is unanimous.
Okay, yeah.
And this is where, and here are the reasons why
we prefer this version.
We want to go in this way.
And yeah.
It's not just we appreciate that you
yeah.
got us started to think about it,
yeah.
talking about it. That was useful.
Yeah.
And it was, because it solidified what we don't want to do. I didn't say that.
Yeah.
But that then when we had a contrast, we
mm-hmm.
could see that the outcome, the goals we were going
yeah.
for, would be more along this model. So we're going to continue.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do think it's possible for us to get done with something posted before.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I actually like that. I like the idea of not losing the momentum, so not saying we'll have it by September.
Yeah.
Just saying, still committing, I think we can get this done by
yeah.
the end of this term. We'll get it posted. We'll have hearings in the fall.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, what the conversation we had today is exactly the mentality that they wanted the procedures to go in. Everyone has always been saying, let's make it less punitive, make it more educational, make it easier, make it more streamlined. Today, that conversation is what we had, and if someone listened to the recording, they would understand there's our thought process right there. And this is mostly in line with national best practices, but we're also adapting it to the Cornell setting as well, making sure that we're not losing some of the most important parts of our code, and we're not losing the fairness aspect. And I think we are in the mindset that they want us to be in, as they've always said, and they've never been able to understand, but if they would listen to this recording, they would understand exactly where we're coming from. And so that I will also put very clearly in this, in our kind of just direction, saying, here's why we thought this is the best way going forward. And it echoes everything you've been asking of us.
Yeah. I think that emphasizing that is really a great idea. This is what you wanted. This is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, taking the best of all worlds. And in fact, I think you could point out that we were concerned also, not only with the content of the university council, what they gave us, but the tone, the complexity, you know, that we're going in this direction. I think that's great. Yeah, I mean, there's lots for us to talk about, but I totally agree with Mark.
Thank you, everyone. It's bright, shining hope in this ever darkness and of uncertainty.
Yeah. I have to leave the room now.
take care.
I think it's actually, I was on the spot. It was actually really nice out. So I think there is sun. So, yes. Thank you, everyone. I really appreciate it. Bye. Thank you for being on the Zoom call. Thank you.
Take care.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.